Welcome to JFK Spotlight on Health. It's brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz, and I'm joined this week by neurologist Dr. Martin Herman. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning, Joel.
We're talking about aphasia today. It's in the news because actor Bruce Willis just announced he's retiring from acting after being diagnosed with aphasia. Now, aphasia isn't anything new, but most of us are hearing about it for the first time. I know I was when the news came out about Bruce Willis. Could you tell us what exactly is aphasia?
Sure. Aphasia is a disorder of communication that's specifically limited to speech. There are other words, you know, for problems with writing, reading, etc., but this is either producing speech or comprehending speech based on a brain problem.
Okay, and what causes that?
There are a lot of causes of aphasia. Some of them, occasionally children can be born with them, but almost invariably it indicates that there was some type of traumatic lesion or disease. The most common cause that we see, of course, is stroke, which accounts for about 40% of aphasia. But that also can occur as a developmental problem in children. There are some peculiar diseases where children start out with speech that they develop normally, and then somewhere around 3 or 4 years of age, they lose it. In adults, again, there are problems that there's an entity called primary progressive aphasia in which there's no direct insult like brain trauma or a brain tumor, mm-hmm. but rather a degenerative process really akin to type very much like Alzheimer's disease, where one again loses speech.
Now, you said that, my dad had a brain surgery years back, and as a result of the surgery, they said that he had a stroke, and his speech hasn't been the same since. He's doing fine now, but the reason I bring that up is, is that aphasia because his speech is affected, or could it be other things? Because I've never heard the term before, and I went through all that with my dad.
No. Let's just go backwards a little bit.
Okay.
The speech is localized for most people to the left hemisphere of the brain. That's 100% in right-handed people, and in left-handed people, even they, 40 to 50%, it's still localized on the left. There are primary areas of the brain that are concerned with speech. In particular, there's one sort of closer to the eye that has to do with what's expressive speech. And then there's another one that's farther back that has to do with comprehension of speech.
Okay.
Any lesion, whether it is a stroke, whether it's a brain tumor that grows in one of these areas, whether it's brain trauma that happened to affect that, all of these things can lead to an aphasia. I mean, by saying that somebody has aphasia, that doesn't imply its etiology. It implies really what the deficit is and for the most part, what part of the brain was damaged.
I see. So it's the brain damage is an aphasia.
Brain damage causes the aphasia.
Causes the aphasia. Okay. And you said there were different types of it. So as we know, again, getting back to the Bruce Willis example, he's retiring from his job. It affects your job. It affects your relationship. It affects your day-to-day function. How so? I mean, is there different levels of an aphasia?
Yes. Different levels, different degrees of severity. The main dichotomy, the main dividing line is whether it's only affecting expression, in which case when you speak to a person they understand what you're saying but their difficulty is trying to generate a proper response. Then the other type is called a receptive aphasia, in which these people speak frequently, very quickly. They don't have any limitation in producing words, though the words don't make sense. But the real problem is that they can't understand what you're telling them. For instance, if it's an expressive aphasia, if I were to tell somebody, hold up your left hand, they would know that, and they would be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ask them to say, the cow jumped over the moon, they'd have tremendous problem. On the other hand, a person with a receptive aphasia, if you ask them to hold up their left hand, they wouldn't understand what you're talking about. The receptive aphasias are much more difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
Because in trying to do therapy, you know, your input is very, very limited. Now, you may get around this to some extent with reading and writing, but often those two are involved as well. But they are not strictly aphasia because they're not speech.
So you're saying that they don't understand lift your left hand. How do they function at all? If they don't understand what you're saying, and you said that they what they say doesn't make a whole lot of sense, you don't understand what they're saying, what kind of life are they living there? Is there no communication?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a much worse situation than a person who has an expressive aphasia. Now, both can get better over time if it's due to an acute insult, like trauma, like a stroke or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, speech therapy is available, though it's much harder in this receptive type. But on the other hand, if it's due to a degenerative problem, these entities called primary progressive aphasia, this is due to continued degeneration of brain cells, and this does not get better. And you're right. The people who have people who have an aphasia, if it doesn't get better, regardless of the type, they're going to be severely limited.
We're talking with neurologist Dr. Martin Herman at JFK University Medical Center in Hackensack Meridian Health. And how is an aphasia, how is it diagnosed? How do you know that is what it is? And what is it sometimes confused with, like another type of impairment?
Yeah, that's a good question. Expressive aphasias, well, first of all, most aphasias that occur in adult life occur acutely. So, I mean, it's obvious that something did occur. In the case where it's a stroke, often it's accompanied by paralysis on the opposite side. So if most people are left side dominant for speech, most of them present with both a difficulty with speech as well as a right-sided paralysis. So this is fairly straightforward. You know, any doctor really would know what that is. And I think most laymen would realize that probably it was a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's something that's developed slowly, that can be very, very difficult to diagnose. And frequently, they present as a cognitive problem, and often the diagnosis might be made on some imaging where you've imaged the area of the brain that's involved and you see that there's a brain tumor. But going the other way, if the problem is that they don't understand, and with that part of the brain is not usually associated with any motor deficit like paralysis,
right,
these people are not uncommonly admitted first to psychiatry because they look psychotic. They don't understand what you say, and when they speak in word salad or gibberish, and that's not an unusual thing to happen, and frequently that diagnosis may be confused for some time.
Is that something that, and I apologize for using Bruce Willis as the example every time, but that's the only one. Is that something that could eventually happen to him?
I don't know what Bruce Willis has because they only announced it as aphasia. But usually when this is a problem, I mean, the releases are so-and-so had a stroke and he's been left with either weakness or aphasia. He can't speak. You remember... Yeah, I don't know. Do you remember Patricia Neal, the actress? She won the Academy Award for HUD. This probably goes back long before your time. But in any case, she's the woman that had a stroke and had aphasia and subsequently recovered. But when the press release says that they're suffering from aphasia, that's not the way it usually is released when it's due to a clear-cut acute abnormality. My inclination on something like this is that he has some type of degenerative process, though I don't know that for sure,
mm-hmm.
but that's what it sounds like because there aren't a whole lot of things that you would characterize that way.
So let's go back to the extreme version of it that you described. What type of therapy can you get for that? And are there situations where it's completely resolved? Or at least to a point where they can understand and you can understand them.
Yes. I mean, generally speaking, I mean, the only real approach to therapy is speech therapy. And okay. there, a skilled speech therapist is going to look for whatever avenue is open to approach them. For instance, let's say the person doesn't understand spoken language, but may understand written language, so that you might be able to get around this by exercises that you give the instructions not verbally,
right.
but you give them by writing the commands. Most of the time, speech therapy is helpful to some extent, but obviously there are factors that jive into this. For instance, age is a very important thing. Children get aphasia if it happens before age one. Primarily, they can learn by shifting to the opposite hemisphere, but we lose that plasticity the older that we get, so that okay. a person who develops an aphasia in adult life, often therapy, though it may be helpful. Sorry.
It's okay.
I can't stop that ringing.
That's all right.
Unfortunately.
No problem.
Yeah. But in any case, the therapy is helpful, but the older they are and the greater the extent of the lesion, for instance, if it's a very small one, then there's more brain that can recover. But that's really the two determinant factors. Age and the extent of the lesion determine how far back people can come. Now, mm-hmm. they can come back a long, long way. For instance, Patricia Neal, the actress I cited, ultimately did get back to acting, and you would never know from listening that she ever had an aphasia. But that's not commonly the rule.
Now, you mentioned a one-year-old. So can we focus on that for a minute? So I know a lot of people listening are probably thinking, okay, how do I know if my baby has this and so forth? So what are the signs in a child? Because they're not really speaking at that point or speaking clearly anyhow. So how do you determine it in an infant
right.
or a toddler?
Of course, there are a couple of ways. Number one, every parent watches the milestones on their child, and if they see that speech is delayed, they're going to take them to a pediatrician, and the pediatrician is undoubtedly going to do some type of imaging testing.
Mm-hmm.
If those that have this, if they have an associated motor deficit, that is, if they are born also with cerebral palsy with some type of motor defect, then it's, I think, much more obvious that what the problem is. But really, it's in a child of that age, it's the fact that they don't develop speech at the expected time.
And that's the surefire, well, not the surefire sign, because there could be multiple reasons for that, but that would be one of the symptoms. What are some of the other symptoms that we should look for?
In children or adults?
Let's start with children.
Well, with children, I think it's really just a delay in development. And people, they monitor when do they sit up, when do they start walking, when should they start talking. I mean, it's simply, if there's no obvious paralysis, if you see that the child obviously is not using the right arm or the left arm at all, I mean, you would know that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, there are many different causes. But any good pediatrician is going to start with looking at the brain. The older that we get, most cases of aphasia are not difficult diagnoses to make at all. Again, because most of them are associated with stroke. The real problem are those with what we call primary progressive aphasias, in which it's due to a degenerative process like Alzheimer's or frontotemporal dementia. And in those cases, it can be very difficult because they don't have any motor findings. They only have progressive limitation of speech.
Mm-hmm.
But as it becomes obvious, usually to their mate, the husband or their wife, they're going to take them to a physician. And there are a variety of standardized tests that can be done to test for aphasia. It's fairly straightforward. Any speech therapist will be able to do that.
So in relation to the dementia or Alzheimer's, is it sometimes confused with those, or is that what causes the aphasia? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the disease itself that causes
it.
Aphasia. And if you were to do, let's say, an MRI, or even better yet, something called an FDG PET scan, which is like a CAT scan of the brain in which you inject a labeled glucose, because sugar is the only thing that the brain can metabolize, and you can look for cold spots. And those cold spots, for instance, if it is an expressive aphasia, the area that we call Broca's area, which is one that I said would be closer to the eye, would show up cold, whereas normal function would show up red, indicating that the brain is metabolizing glucose. This might show up blue, indicating that the rate of metabolism is very low, and from looking at that, you would know that that part of the brain is not working.
Now, can aphasia develop? I think you touched on this earlier, but just from banging your head, could that start the ball rolling on the whole, all the issues that we've been talking about?
Not a minor degree of trauma, no.
Okay.
It would be much more likely a significant degree of trauma with fractured skull or a subdural hematoma, that is a clot between the skull and the brain, or a hemorrhage within the brain itself. But to develop an aphasia implies significant damage.
What about, we hear about football players, on all the concussions, and even kids, teenagers who get multiple concussions. What's the relation there? Is there one?
There, you're talking about an entirely different entity, post-traumatic encephalopathy.
Okay.
It's due to recurrent brain damage, in which I don't know how deeply you want to get into this, but
deep.
It's associated with deposition of an abnormal protein called tau, T-A-U.
Okay.
And there, that can become self-perpetuating and getting worse. But here the etiology is trauma.
Right. And then there is trauma, playing sports. A lot of teenagers, they get repeated concussions. And you're saying that's totally different than something like this, than aphasia.
It's different. Yeah, I mean, it's different in that this is this is the buildup of a chronic condition due to repetitive trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the usual case we see with aphasia is that the patient has a skull fracture with a hemorrhage that happened to be in the part of the brain that controls speech. This, what you're talking about, these other folks, this is much more than just difficulty with speech. It's significant difficulty with memory, difficulty with making mm-hmm. decisions. In other words, they are much more like an Alzheimer's patient, whereas the acute aphasias are much more like stroke.
Okay, I got you. All right, JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. Again, this is Joel Katz, and I'm joined by neurologist Dr. Martin Herman, and we're talking about aphasia. What kind of research is being done, and how far have we come along since aphasia first existed?
A lot of the research that's being done now has to do with networks. That is, way back when, in the 1800s, when aphasia was first reported by Broca, this type of aphasia have great difficulty expressing is called a Broca's aphasia. It's named after Paul Broca. Back then, he found that area of the brain that resulted in this, and subsequently it bears his name. But it turned out that same brain, when it was subsequently autopsied, the tumor that they saw in that area, actually beneath the surface of the brain, beneath the cortex, had a much more extensive distribution than what he thought. So that we kind of look at a lot of aphasias now as not so much a damage to just one part of the brain, but it's really a damage to a network of connecting centers. Most of the research that's being done with this is being done with what are called functional PET scans, which is the thing that I just alluded to, where you can inject glucose, see what part of the brain is doing it when you're giving people a given task to work out. It may be something simple like a mathematical test. It may be something simple like just generating certain words. But the majority of the research that I see has to do with trying to find these networks. Now, in terms of therapy, what type of research is being done? There has not been a great deal of advance in therapy for this,
no.
Unfortunately. Hmm. It's a bad problem that's difficult to deal with. There are a lot of hints that one could give for the family of these of the people who have aphasia that are fairly important to follow.
So, but speech therapy is one avenue, right? Or is that the only therapy there is?
That really is the only therapy that there is.
And on the different levels of an aphasia, when someone goes into speech therapy, what are their odds in maybe not, you know, fully recuperating, but getting to a point where they can live a quote unquote normal life? They
well,
can have a job. They can, yeah.
What you say, I mean, an aphasia, if he doesn't have a motor deficit, can live a fairly good life. I mean, they can drive, they can function in every way. Mm-hmm. Their problem is simply in communication, and they frequently find ways around it. In general, you know, people who live with people who have aphasia, they learn that they have to be patient, that they have to make eye contact when they're speaking, that you try and keep the what you're putting out there as simple as you can, and frequently yes and no answers. If you can put what you want into a yes and no paradigm, works extremely well. And over time, there's improvement. How far back anybody gets, again, is dependent upon how bad it is, how much brain is actually damaged, and what age. Mm-hmm. But it's very unpredictable. The only thing that you really can predict pretty much is that if you're not showing any improvement by 3 months or a significant amount, there's going to be a significant deficit. And anything that's there by 6 months, that's going to be permanent.
Okay, so if you are seeing progress within the first couple months, can you get back to a point? Have there been cases where people have gotten back to a point where they can function and they can have a job? I know with your family, they know how to speak and they know how, you know, you're saying you yes or no answers, things like that. But can they get back to a point where they can hold down a job and things of that nature?
Yes, they can.
Okay.
You know, but again, it's very variable, but certainly they can. There are people who have made excellent recoveries from severe aphasias.
All right. Before I let you go, doctor, I just if somebody has these symptoms and they're listening and they come to you and you do run some tests and you decide this is the issue and you're in the exam room right now with the patient and or with the patient's loved one, what do you how do you share that information?
So I'm assuming that this is the kind of a patient who comes in with a slowly progressive problem.
Mm-hmm.
We would normally, I would send them for what are called neuropsychological testing, which is fairly extensive, 3 to 4 hours of cognitive testing of various functions. But language function is also evaluated in great detail. So if this were the first visit, I would tell them that we would need this kind of testing. There are certain blood tests that we would do to make sure it's not some type of reversible process. And we would want to get an MRI of the brain. On the second visit, when I had all that data together, and it clearly looks like it is going to be a primary progressive aphasia, that is one that is going to get worse, and unfortunately they don't respond to therapy, then it's a question of educating the family that this is what mm-hmm. it is, this is where it's going, and we don't have a whole lot, unfortunately, that we can do about it. And perhaps the most important thing is to allow people to prepare for this so that they can get affairs into order, they can get proper power of attorneys, bank accounts can be straightened out.
Right.
But unfortunately, we do not have a cure for this, and we don't have a drug for Alzheimer's, unfortunately, and not one that really works.
Well, thank you so much. I think we've all learned a lot today about this. I think this is aphasia. I would, you know, until the Bruce Willis news came out, and we mentioned this earlier, I don't think most people knew, never even heard of it before. So thank you for educating us on this, and thank you for taking the time today. Neurologist Dr. Martin Herman, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
This has been JFK Spotlight on Health, brought to you by Hackensack Meridian Health, JFK University Medical Center. Keep getting better. I'm Joel Katz. For a podcast of this show, you can go to foxsportsradionewjersey.com. For more information, hackensackmeridianhealth.org. That's hackensackmeridianhealth.org.